Welcome to Circonomy, the Connecticut Economic Resource Center's podcast, where we share insights into strategies, initiatives, and programs to help grow and support Connecticut's economy. CERC offers a complete range of services and assistance to build your local economy, make informed decisions, find location opportunities, and grow businesses. Learn more about CERC at CERC.com. That's CERC.com. This week's episode is hosted by Jason Giuletti, CERC's Vice President of Business Recruitment.
Hello, everyone. This is Jason Giuletti here at the Connecticut Economic Resource Center. We're here today with Dana Buchan from the law firm Murtha & Kalina. We're happy today to take you into the conversation of immigration. Immigration is a critical issue. It's a hot topic, especially as it relates to, obviously, our international companies and those individuals that may be bringing their families or larger business partners into the United States to do business. And ultimately, we're looking for investment into the state of Connecticut. So today, I'd love to take some time, introduce Dana to everyone, and talk a little bit about what are things these companies, these individuals, the different forms of immigration, the different types of visas that exist, and you know, really educating everyone on what should be done as it relates to thinking about immigration as a means to run their business, run their operation, and ultimately take that next step forward. So with that, I'd like to introduce Dana. Dana, if you can share a little bit about yourself, a little bit about the firm, and we'll start our conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I'm happy to be here and talk on this beloved topic to myself. And want to talk about Murtha & Kalina, our law firm. It's a general practice law firm located in Connecticut, in Hartford, New Haven, and Stamford, as well as Boston and New York offices. We do everything pertaining to legal services, including trademark, intellectual property, trademark, patents, copyrights, corporate services, and of course, what I do, which is immigration services. As a partner in the immigration area, I work with both businesses and individual clients in overcoming the barriers imposed by visa laws in the United States. And especially these days, such laws tend to be quite the barriers, but with careful planning, one could overcome them, especially in the business world. The visa laws in the United States are designed to assist cross-border businesses. We want to encourage businesses investing in the U.S., and so there are quite a few types of visa categories that are available for foreign investors and entrepreneurs. And I'm going to go over some of those visa types. And I'm going to start with the basic visa that one uses to come travel on business to the United States. If you are from most of the world, you will need a B1/B2 visa as a business visitor or a business or a visitor for pleasure. If you are from a select 36 countries that have the visa waiver program, then you could enter without a visa for a period not to exceed 90 days per year in order to conduct light business meetings. So the visa waiver program is called ESTA. Many people are familiar with the ESTA forms. The B1, B2 visa is for 6 months for each of the entries that you have. It could be issued for 10 years, but for any given entry, you only have up to 6 months. Now, I want to warn people that the B1, B2, as well as the ESTA, are not for intense work activities, are not for activities associated with managing a business. They are just for light business meetings, meeting partners, shaking hands, negotiating some contracts, preliminary setup activities, but in no way could they be used for other more substantive activities for which you will need the other types of visas, such as the L1 or the E2 or the H1B.
So Dana, with that, and thank you, because I think that's very helpful for our listeners. So thinking about that, so if I'm a company, let's use, for example, we do work with Israel, right? So you're a small company looking to open up a sales and marketing office here, and you want one of the folks from that country to come here mm-hmm. for a period of time to get the office going, potentially hire some of the first employees, what type of things should they look to in terms of immigration? And use it in the context of Israel, use it in the context of other countries that may not have that same reciprocal relationship, but what are some things they should start to think about when it relates to immigration and visas for opening up that business and starting the process?
First, they should talk to an immigration attorney, because from the very beginning, you need to be mindful of visa laws. It's the one thing that could block your entire company from succeeding on U.S. soil, because if the main executive or the main manager is not available to be present on U.S. soil, that means that, the business itself cannot evolve. So it's very important that before you even contemplate business activities in the U.S., you consult with an immigration lawyer who could establish perhaps a gradual visa strategy for you. So if you are only in the tentative stages of exploring the U.S. market, an Israeli company might think of first using the B1 visa. And for up to six months. When it gets serious and when they make a decision to establish a corporate presence in the U.S., whether it's because they got financing from the state of Connecticut or it's because they got a business partner here that they want to enter into a joint venture with, whatever the reason may be, once they make that solid decision to expand operations in the U.S., it's time for the L1 visa in the case of Israel.
So Dana, is it important for these companies, as they're not only looking at what they need for visas, but as they're starting up their business entity, is it important for them to think about visa and business entity creation together, or is that two separate things?
Very good point. Absolutely. You have to think about the visa and entity creation in tandem. You have to think of them as together, because the visa type that you will ultimately need depends on how you set up your corporate structure. For example, the L1 visa relies on a corporate affiliation between the US-based entity and the Israeli entity. So if you know you're going to need a visa, you might as well have the proper entity structure set in place before you apply for that visa. Therefore, it is very important that you consult with that immigration lawyer. And not any type of immigration lawyer. You need someone who understands business law as well. And that's something that I've been doing for some years now. I've been both a business lawyer and an immigration lawyer. So I set up the corporate entities in such a way that the right visa is obtained by the principal. And the L1 is appropriate for someone from Israel. But there are other types of visas that would be appropriate for folks from countries that have a bilateral investment treaty with the United States. We're talking about the E2 visa. Unfortunately, Israel particularly doesn't have it, although there's always room for negotiating a bilateral investment treaty with the United States for an E2 treatment. But most European countries, Canada, Mexico, a lot of Latin American countries, Australia, a bunch of Asian and even African countries have the E2 visa. And it's about 80 countries around the world that have this E2 visa. What is the E2 visa? It allows either a foreign company or a foreign individual to invest a substantial amount of capital in the U.S. and create a U.S.-based entity or acquire an existing U.S.-based entity. And when I say substantial amount of capital, I'm not referring to the program that many people heard about, which is the EB-5 program that requires at least $500,000 or $1 million of investment. I'm talking at about potentially even less than $500,000. Could be $100,000 to $150,000 of investment.
Excellent. Wonderful. So if a company is there certain guidelines or certain numbers, I guess, that they have to employ to get certain visas? Is there restrictions on the visas that limit their ability to do certain types of business? What other types of things should they be thinking of as they relate to getting these visas, whether it's the B visa, the L visa, the E visa? What are there special requirements that our folks should be aware of that are maybe new or maybe have changed over recent years?
The easiest visa is the B1, the business visitor, or the ESTA, because all you need to prove in that respect is that you're visiting the U.S. for business purposes. That's it. As to the L1 and the E2 visa, that's where it's getting a little more complex. There's an expectation that even though you are creating a brand new establishment or a brand new subsidiary in the United States, that with time you generate some U.S. worker jobs for that subsidiary. How many jobs? Well, econometrics analysis of how many jobs need to be created for any one foreign executive would be 4 U.S. subordinates for 1 foreign executive. But that is not set in stone. That's just a guideline. That's just what people know to be the case. However, if you only if you only hire 4 full-time U.S. workers by the end of the first year of operation, you might still not convince immigration authorities to renew that L1 visa. So I would advise that to keep in mind a minimum of 4 full-time U.S. worker employees by the end of the first year of operations. However, to think especially lately, to hire even more, because you want to have that cushion. So as to enable an immigration officer to conclude, look, there's enough jobs created locally to justify the presence, the continuous presence of a foreign executive.
Excellent. So of those foreign executives, that was very, very helpful. Looking to bring their families, for example, how would that process work as it relates to the business? Is it separate? Is it looked at together? How does that work if somebody wants to bring their family?
It works beautifully because both the E2 and the L1 visas allow for derivative spouses to also receive an L2 and an E2 visa, and the minor children under 21 who are not married could also accompany the principal on an L2 and an E2 visa. Now, the spouse of an L1 or the spouse of an E2 also gets work privileges. The kids, however, only get to study but not work.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you with that. So this all seems very complex, and obviously you're a tremendous resource to help these folks. As they're looking at timeline, many folks have timelines for their investment, whether it's going to be the next month, next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. How long of a process does it typically take, and how soon should they engage somebody like yourself to get the process started for them once they know that they do need a visa and they do want to start and create that business in Connecticut?
I would be happy if I got consulted at least before they make a decision to invest. So say they're here on a B1 or an ESTA. I probably am not needed at the level of getting the ESTA or the B1, but once they're here on a B1 and they seriously contemplate establishing a presence in the U.S., that's when I need to be consulted. And at that point in time, we could decide what the investment timeline is. I could tell you the processing times for the U.S. government to grant an L1 or an E2, and those are L1, it would be just a 15-day processing time. Wow. If you pay a premium processing fee, which is just $1,225. And the E2 visa, it depends, it varies, because it's usually processed at a U.S. consulate abroad, and those timelines differ. It could be anything from a month to 4 months.
So, thank you. Is there any special differentiation? You mentioned a little bit with the bilateral agreement, and you mentioned some other countries. Are there any other things that folks should be aware of coming from different parts of the world that make it different if you're coming from Europe versus coming from Asia versus coming from South America? Anything that sort of folks should be aware of that's maybe unique, or something that they should just be aware of that maybe we haven't covered so far?
The only difference is among countries, because immigration laws are a matter of federal law, so it should technically be applied in a uniform way all around the world. However, there always tend to be differences from one consulate to another because of the country conditions there. So, for example, there may be a little bit of a difference from how they treat an investor from a country where there's a high fraud rate, in that a lot of people commit visa fraud, or from countries with low fraud rates, such as European countries are generally considered to have low fraud. And so that's the only difference. So it's not a difference in the laws, it's the difference in the implementation and the scrutiny applied to the visa application.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time today. We certainly appreciate it. As you are listening to this, you see the resources and the expertise we have here in Connecticut to help companies. Dana, is there anything else our folks should know about this process outside of really getting in touch with you, knowing that you are the expert in this, and it's critical. It's an important stage for all of our international companies because they do need this visa to be able to get that company started in the United States. Obviously, we want that here in Connecticut, but anything else that they should be aware of that we should make them notify them now outside of getting in touch with you immediately?
Yes, I would like to praise the state of Connecticut for being internationally friendly because that counts even in the visa journey. For example, if one establishes an entity here in Connecticut, and for example, if that entity receives funding from the state of Connecticut, it has a mark of legitimacy, even in front of the federal officials at the U.S. consulate abroad. Or if they need further validation on the ground from someone like CERC, hey, this is a subsidiary that has been established pursuant to programs that we have in place, and they're legit, they're a brick and mortar establishment down the road. These are the types of local testimonies that the state of Connecticut and the private sector in Connecticut could provide to help the U.S. consulates abroad with adjudicating those visas favorably.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening today. We greatly appreciate your time, and we're always here, and Dana's here to help you through the immigration process and visa process. So thank you again for your time today, and thank you, Dana, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to CERconomy. And be sure to visit CERC.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover bonus content. Until next time.